fiscal systems are decades old. According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
Why is there? I saw the Iraqi soldiers coming to the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the What Is Truth podcast, a rare Sunday edition. Didn't do a show yesterday, had a last second cancellation, but figured I'd do a show on the Lincoln assassination. Thank you guys for the few that have come out. Last couple of weeks, I have finished working on the audiobook for the Abraham Lincoln assassination by David McGowan. Great, great book. I loved it so much that I felt like I had to do a voiceover so you guys can enjoy it. In my opinion, it sounds a lot better if you listen to it at 1.5 speed or, you know, speed it up a little bit. I had to read it slow, so try to eliminate as many mistakes as possible. Still had a few, and some of the pronunciations were a little off, which I found out later on after doing more research. And the last couple of weeks, I've gone down really, really deep into the Lincoln assassination rabbit hole, never realizing that the damn thing, the official story is a bunch of nonsense, just like many other conspiracies. We do get told that through the official story, that it was indeed a conspiracy. The question is, how much deeper did the conspiracy actually go? In the official story, we are told that the conspirators were rounded up almost immediately, tried in a military tribunal, so very unconstitutionally like, and justice was served. John Wilkes Booth was killed, allegedly, before any trial, in a similar fashion to what happened during the JFK assassination. So in today's show, I want to go over the Lincoln assassination. And so if you are well versed in it, you will completely know what's going on. And if you are lukewarm to it, maybe don't know much, don't fret. We'll go over the official narrative. And then I want to conclude by pointing out some of the similarities that David McGowan made in that audiobook in comparison to recent conspiracies such as the JFK assassination, 9/11. He died in 2015. And as I've gone down the Lincoln assassination, I was able to spot other similarities, like in the Jeff Epstein stuff. So it should be a good show, very, very informative. And it just goes to show that all these events, all these conspiracies are indeed connected in one way, shape, form, or another. Same playbook gets used over and over. And I also want to preface this show by talking about Lincoln. Lincoln is an American icon, an American hero. Many Black folks view him as the liberator of, to end slavery and whatnot. I did an episode with Ryan Dawson, episode number 76, on my podcast player, or wherever you catch my show at. It's episode number 76, and we got a different view of Lincoln. His views on Blacks were really not that great. In fact, he actually wanted to ship Black people back to Africa. But when the logistics to that were just too high, too expensive, settled for other alternatives. So he wasn't the hero that has been made out to be, as with any other of these so-called leaders and puppets. That being said, I do feel that the Lincoln assassination was probably the first big deep state hit. And some of the the names that come up are Edward Stanton, who was the Secretary of War, which in today's terms, in Orwellian manner, would be the Secretary of Defense. But back then it was the Secretary of War. And he was the equivalent to Donnie Rumsfeld. I have no question that he definitely played a huge role in it. Same thing with Vice President Johnson. And so let's go ahead and touch on the... what's up, Gregory Walker? What's up, Mr. T? What's up, Mikey? Any word? Thank you guys for joining. It's so in the Lincoln assassination, for those that may not be too familiar with it, it wasn't just an assassination on Lincoln. There were supposed to be simultaneous hits. On that hit list were obviously President Lincoln, but also Ulysses S. Grant and Mr. General Seward, or Seward, as some say his name, as well as Vice President Johnson. They were on the hit list simultaneously in a very, very interesting similarity to what happened on 9/11, when multiple targets were hit simultaneously. And that's just one of those similarities to the 9/11 story. And I wrote down a few, took some notes down that I want to definitely go hit and go over. But John Wilkes Booth, as many of you know, I think most everyone knows, was an actor. He was a very famous actor, very well known. It would be the equivalent to like a Brad Pitt assassinating the president. Very well known. And he came from a long line of a very prominent family. His father was Brutus Booth, who, if you remember in the Caesar assassination, was one of the guys that plotted along with the other senators to take out Julius Caesar. So a little bit of Shakespearean irony in this whole thing. And the story really is just preposterous when you really break it down. And I think that's why David McGowan's book that I voiced over, I think he did a phenomenal job in pointing out many of the absurdities and ridiculousness parts and elements to the official narrative on the Lincoln assassination. I listened to another podcast on this very subject with a couple of guys that are middle of the road historians. They touch on some of the conspiratorial evidence, as well as they stick with the official narrative on other parts, including some of the more ludicrous. And I'm going to play a clip of it. I actually try to get one of the guys, he goes by Lord Buckley on Twitter. I try to get him on my show, and the son of a bitch blocked me. Fucking Zionist piece of shit. I have no idea why he blocked me. I'm assuming he looked at some of my tweets. And I already knew he was a Trumper. I already knew he was a Zionist. But in my invitation to have him on the show, I wasn't going to touch on any of that shit. It was just going to be Lincoln assassination. But instead of telling me no or nothing, he just straight up blocked me. But blocking aside, they did do a real good show on the Lincoln assassination. Now I'm going to play a clip of that show. I also listened to Mr. Swanson, who is the premier, quote unquote, voice on the Lincoln assassination. And that son of a bitch sticks with the official story 100%. In his mind, Edwin Stanton is a good guy, a friend of Lincoln. And how dare anyone question his loyalty to Lincoln? And then, of course, we have David McGowan's version where fuckery is afoot all over the place in terms of the Lincoln assassination, including the attack on the Seward residence, which in his mind, it's the whole story is so preposterous that you have to question that anything even happened in that house that night. So let's try to go over with the official narrative before we go any further. But essentially, we are told that John Wilkes Booth hated Lincoln so much that that's what made him do what he allegedly did. And the first original plot was to kidnap Lincoln. It was very well known that Lincoln traveled around town without any security, without any guards or any of that. And so the original plan, according to the official narratives, was to kidnap him. And his hate for Lincoln was just like, nope. In his mind, according to the official story, is that it would have been better just to kill him. And so he recruited several characters for this conspiracy. And I'm going to go over some names and give a little bit of background, not all of them. And that way, in case you missed the audiobook version that I put in prior to this show, you'll have a better familiarity. And so the story will make a lot more sense because I just dove into it. That's why when I read the audiobook, some of the pronunciations were wrong because I just dove into it. And so it took me a minute to register what character was what, who did this, and what. And now I feel somewhat of a scholar in the situation with how deep I've gone into it. But some of the guys that Wilkes Booth recruited were, and the funny thing is they were all from Maryland. They weren't from the South. The exception to that would be Lewis Powell or Lewis Payne, Lewis Thornton. He had a bunch of aliases. And this was a young guy that looked like a Calvin Klein, Calvin Klein model. Let's see if I can find him up right here. And this is the guy right here, Lewis Powell. He was from the South. He was a ex-Confederate soldier, and all these guys were young. So what you're going to see, all these guys were in their 20s. Most of them from Maryland, from the Maryland area. And except this guy. This guy was from the South. He had other brothers that had died in the Civil War. He had joined the Confederate Army at 17. And I believe he was 20 when he allegedly participated in this plot. And the other interesting thing is that the photographer who took these pictures, these pictures that look very contemporary, very, very exquisite work, also took a picture of Abraham Lincoln when, on his deathbed. He also allegedly took a picture of John Wilkes Booth, but that picture was destroyed, lost, never seen again, which fuels thoughts that maybe Wilkes Booth never even died. Again, a Epstein similarity, but we'll touch on that later on. But the Louis Payne, his role in the assassination was to go into the Seward mansion and kill him while Wilkes Booth took out Abraham Lincoln. And let's see. Going back to the Lincoln assassination with Wilkes Booth, he recruited all these guys. And then George Atzerodt, I'm sorry, before I skip ahead, George Atzerodt was due to, let's see, I'm sorry, share screen, George Atzerodt, where the hell are you? There you are. This guy was a German immigrant. He was handy with boats and shit. And, he was assigned the task to kill Vice President Johnson, the other simultaneous attack. And allegedly, he pussed out. He instead went to a bar and got drunk and left a message to Vice President Johnson, said, "Hey, I'm sorry to bother you. Wanted to see if you were home." And the poor son of a bitch was hung. He didn't even kill anyone. He pussed out, got drunk, and he still got hung through the military tribunal. And so that was essentially the plot there, was to have all these hits take on simultaneously to cause chaos. Dissent is what we're told is what Booth wanted, and again largely fueled because of his hatred for Abraham Lincoln. When have we heard that line? Oh yeah, 9/11, these cave-dwelling Muslims hated the U.S. so much that that's why they did what they did. So We'll start with Wilkes Booth. Wilkes Booth, again, was a famous actor, and he had worked at Ford's Theater. He knew the place inside and out. And when he got word that Abraham Lincoln was going to be at that play later on, that's when he devised his plan and said, "All right, this is when we hit. This is where we're gonna make the hits." And one thing that David McGowan points out in an exquisite manner was the absurdity that John Wilkes Booth planned this hit on Abraham Lincoln, and he was going to go in there armed with a single-shot Derringer, a wildly inaccurate gun, at a time when the Colt revolver was around. John Wilkes Booth was making $20,000 a year at this time period. So I don't know what the math is for $20,000 a year in that time period, but I'm assuming it was a shit ton of money. Dude was well-to-do. When he recruited his co-conspirators, he was wining and dining them to the finest of restaurants. The motherfucker had money. He had guns. But instead of taking a Colt revolver, he decided to go armed with a single-shot Derringer. And again, he was supposed to take out Ulysses S. Grant, who coincidentally backed out of being there with Abraham Lincoln in that booth that same day. Doesn't that sound familiar to people? Just coincidentally missing out their flights on 9/11, high-level officials. Or Larry fucking Silverstein, who had breakfast in the Twin Towers every fucking morning. But that particular day, he had to get his hair cut and he couldn't be there. And that's what saved him. Again, the similarities to all this shit are so many, and we're gonna hit those G-spots nice and hard. So Wilkes Booth, his plan, and this is how ridiculous the story is, was that he was gonna barricade the door with a perfectly sized piece of wood to wedge in the door. And he previously drilled a hole, a peephole, to see who was in the booth. And apparently Abraham Lincoln's security detail missed this detail. Pretty fucking weird. Another thing that Mr. McGowan points out. And he gets into this booth. In with Lincoln are General Rathbone, his wife, Clara Harris, who apparently was his stepsister, and Mary Todd Lincoln, and of course, Abraham Lincoln. Those are the people that were in the booth. And oddly enough, the only statements, the only recounts of those people are of General Rathbone. We don't have any word from Mary Todd Lincoln. We don't have any word from Miss Harris. That's all we have. And as David McGowan pointed out in his book, Rathbone's testimony of the events, which he gave in no less than three occasions, were word for word verbatim, which leads anyone using critical thinking skills to believe that this was a script that General Rathbone had memorized. He only changed it up in one occasion, where he changes it from the third person to a first person account, but everything else remained the same. Pretty fucking weird. And like McGowan states out, no historians ever bother to wonder why or point out how absurd that is, that the witness in this assassination, a key witness at that, who allegedly struggled with Booth, gives a word for word verbatim response. Nothing weird about that, I suppose. But apparently, after Lincoln is shot, there's a ensuing struggle where Booth, carrying his Bowie knife and a gun, after shooting Lincoln, tries a slash at General Rathbone and cuts him to the shoulder from the breast, but he parries the knife. Listen to that audiobook. It's read over and over again. I think three or four times McGowan does it. And I think the point of it, of going over the deposition, is to show you that the whole, that it was a scripted response, memorized, and just making it weird. But after that alleged incident, he jumps down the booth. Some say he sprained his ankle severely. Some say he broke his fibula. Who knows? One of the doctors that saw Booth and tended to him said the injury was superficial. So there's so many of these instances in the official story that are contradictory. Different accounts vary. Again, leading one to suspect that the entire official story regarding the assassination is complete horseshit. Booth gets away in a horse, and during this time, the entire area is in lockdown, but apparently Booth is allowed to escape. He even gives his name to one of the guards watching over the bridge, leaves a calling card. Booth continuously leaves calling cards and IDs everywhere, in much the same way, you know, like we saw the passport in 9/11, completely unblemished. The black box is completely destroyed, but the passports to the hijackers survive. And Booth leaving calling cards everywhere. Here I am, guys. And the other interesting thing is Booth dons disguises later on, but didn't don a disguise when allegedly killing Lincoln. Other weird stuff. And he gets away with, I believe, Mr. Harold. And they're on the run. They hide in a wood thicket for several days. And during one of those days, they get in a boat. You know, a lot of people were helping them out, supposedly sympathizing for them. They get in a boat. All they have to do is cross over to the Potomac, across the Potomac, and they're pretty much good because they'll be in the South and they will be harbored. That's all they have to do. But according to the official story, they're rowing in the darkness of night. They row and row and row. And crazy enough, they land back in the same exact spot. That's the official story. They try and try again. And their last stand is at Garrett's farm, where they are aided and abetted by the Garrett family farm. They're chilling in the barn, and somehow the people in hot pursuit of them are tipped off. And because this is the largest manhunt in American history at the time, they're found. Harold, his accomplice, surrenders immediately. He's like, "Nah, dude, I'm out." According to the official story, Booth wants to engage in a firefight. And there's conflicting reports that I saw. Some people say there were orders to capture Booth alive. There are other reports that say there was no direct order. So I suppose choose what you want to believe. But in any case, Boston Corbett, who is the Jack Ruby of the Lincoln assassination, apparently says that he saw Booth hold up a carbine and he was about to shoot one of the soldiers. And before that, he said he felt God's voice take out Booth, shooting him in the spine, mortally wounding him. And allegedly, that's how Booth died. The problem with that is there were many people that questioned if that was even Booth at all. And there was even one doctor that knew Booth and said, this isn't Booth. This freckled body, I don't remember Booth having freckles. This is not Booth. And there were several people. And even in the preceding investigation, there was people that raised serious questions whether Booth had died. And that's what fueled conspiracies even way back then. A lot of people didn't trust the official narrative. So that is the Booth part of the story. And I quickly touched on the George Atzerodt attempted assassination of Vice President Johnson. I do want to go into the Seward home, General Seward, because that's a fascinating story, and that involves our friend Lewis Powell, the Calvin Klein supermodel. Where is that son of a bitch? Where is that son of a bitch? Oh, there we go. All right. So, Mr. Lewis Powell, Lewis Payne, Lewis Thornton Powell, whatever alias you want to use or are familiar with, you choose. But he was tasked, as I previously mentioned, he was tasked to kill General Seward. He allegedly went up to the home pretending to deliver medical supplies. At this point in town, or I'm sorry, at this point in time. Well, you know what? Before we go there, let me show you a little bit of the home. So as we go into the story on the Seward residence, or Seward residence, I should say, you will have a better idea of what's going on. Share screen. And again, if you are only listening to the podcast, follow my video channels to see the visual representations of what we go over. All right. So here is the Seward Mansion, an exquisite home, three stories. And it's been turned into a museum. As you can see here, a lot of it, nothing has changed since this Seward home was under occupation. All right, so there you get a little taste for the home. Apparently he was an abolitionist. Oh, okay. Here's the carriage apparently in the home. This carriage right here supposedly is the one that he had suffered a horse accident a short time before getting attacked by Mr. Powell or Payne, whatever you want to call him. And he apparently fell off of a horse, and William C. Seward was, let me show you a picture of Mr. Seward too, so you guys know who we're talking about here. Share screen. Okay, so there is Mr. William Seward. He had a carriage accident, fell off, horse kicked him. I don't know exactly what happened. There's different stories again. And he had to have his jaw wired shut. And that's important as we get into this alleged attack into the Seward home. So, let's see. So, Mr. Payne or Powell goes into the home. This is the Calvin Klein guy. And he's pretending. So Mr. Seward is in the third story bedroom. That's important to remember. He's in the third story bedroom recovering. By some accounts, he's completely drugged up. He's got his jaw wired shut, just in terrible shape. So the official story says. And Powell comes up to the front door and claims that he has some medical supplies, gets into a scuffle with a black houseboy or servant because he doesn't want to let him in. In one version of the story, and he just beats the shit out of him. So Powell is what I've been saying is like the ramble of this whole alleged plot. Dude is just taking out motherfuckers left and right. So takes out this kid, has a scuffle with a Seward child. He And before he gets into that scuffle, Powell brought a gun with him and a knife. Apparently all of them were armed with a gun and a knife. And the gun just so happens to misfire. So instead of killing the Seward son, he then proceeds to beat the shit out of him with the gun. Beats him so hard, according to the official narrative, that the steel ramrod is bent. Brain matter is all over the place. But he survives and walks around like a zombie. Then he goes into the, apparently without knowing the layout of the home, finds the Seward bedroom and starts slashing Seward. And the only thing that saved Mr. Seward was, because his jaw had been wired shut just a short time prior to this, that protected his jugular and protected him. And miraculously, as all these official story historians say, miraculously he survived this horrific attack. So Seward's beating the fuck out of people, laying motherfuckers out. But apparently he couldn't finish off this vegetable, this easy, the easiest of all targets in that home. And I guess this brings me back to this is the guy right here, Mark Grupert, who I tried to get on and was the prick that blocked me on Twitter. But again, I suppose I could be biased and be a hater because of that, but I will say they did a great show on this. It's the Lincoln assassination conspiracy. But let me play to you the attack on Seward. And again, he's a middle of the road historian. He kind of touches on a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of official story, but listen to him talk about the official story. When I heard this, I lost my shit. And let me play it for you.
And takes out his Bowie knife and just starts hacking Seward in the face, the neck, repeatedly gashing him with this giant Bowie knife. And because he's wearing this neck brace, he can't really get in a totally fatal wound to kill the Secretary of State, Seward. And then Seward wraps himself up in the bedclothes, you know, all the sheets and pillowcases, and it's hard for Powell to find him. You know, and he's like, whoop, whoop, whoop.
Probably,
you know,
stopped the bleeding, too, with the pressure of all that.
Yes, yes. And he survives. He's stabbed.
Miraculous. Like, nobody knows how the hell he
survives this thing. He's, you know, wounded, and you see the side of his face. You know, he's disfigured for life. But, I mean, he was on morphine when he was laying. I mean, it's the most horrible thing you can imagine. The guy is sedated in his own bed, knows nothing about anything. And here comes this guy.
Psycho
Powell hacking the crap out of him. So anyway, there's blood everywhere. In fact, the daughter slips on the blood, almost kills herself. They start yelling out the window, murderer, murderer. And he calmly comes out. His horse is there. Harold has become a coward and rode away. And he doesn't know where he is. And he calmly rides away on his horse at walking speed, not to attract attention to himself. Powell just rides away into the night slow.
So I wasn't paying attention, but in this version that this gentleman is giving, apparently William Seward wraps himself in sheets. And as Powell is slicing through, he keeps missing. Like, woo, woo, woo. It's almost like a fucking cartoon, man. And this guy is saying it with a straight fucking face. It's the most preposterous thing you'll ever hear. And that, in a nutshell, is the Seward attack. And as David McGowan points out in that book, it's the story is so preposterous. The other thing that, so during the trial, with all those people being in the home, as Mr. McGowan points out, The only statements that were given in court were not from William Seward or his daughter that almost died and screamed, or his other son that had brain matter. The only accounts given were from one of the sons that wasn't even there, and the two black servants. And we have to remember at this point in time, black people voices were completely disregarded at this point in time. And this is the testimonies that you are using, which leads one to believe that they were just saying whatever the government wanted them to say at the trials. And in one of the testimonies, one of the black servants says, Lewis Powell made no noise, just was a silent assassin, slashing motherfuckers. And then in another testimony, Lewis Powell is saying, I'm mad as he's slashing people. So someone's lying. Again, inconsistencies, contradictions with all this shit. So that's the Seward attack. And in reality, again, Vice President Johnson was miraculously survived, and William Seward survived. Ulysses S. Grant survived because he conveniently had to take a train out of town that night when he was supposed to be alongside President Lincoln to be with his kids. He took the midnight train out. Other historians have addressed this. Like, that is so weird that Ulysses S. Grant took the midnight train. And people, official narrative historians, will say the reason Ulysses S. Grant dipped on Abraham Lincoln's invitation to be there that night was because his wife had beef with Mary Todd Lincoln. That's what official narrative people. The weird thing is, if Ulysses S. Grant would have taken the morning train, he would have been able to sleep in his own bed, rest comfortably, taken the morning train, and would have been with his kids almost at the same exact time as the midnight train leaving out of town would have led them there. So Ulysses S. Grant is another rather suspect individual that just bailed out on that night when he was another one on the hit list. So that in a nutshell, again, I just kind of skimmed over a lot of stuff. This wasn't supposed to be very comprehensive as far as the assassination. If you want the comprehensive, definitely check out that audiobook that I did on for David McGowan. Great, great, awesome book on the whole subject. But I think you guys have a little bit of a taste, hopefully, on the official narrative. I want to share with you guys first some of the stark similarities between the Lincoln assassination and JFK assassination. And this is from the website History News Network. Let me put that on the share screen so you guys can see it. They compiled a great list on that very subject. And let's read it. So this is from History News Network, written on November 18 of 2002 by Valerie Klein. The odd parallels between Kennedy and Lincoln. Comparing Kennedy's death to Lincoln's gives you a host of weird coincidences. Some examples are, both presidents were shot in the back of the head on the Friday before a major holiday while seated beside their wives, neither of whom were injured. Both were in the presence of another couple, and in each case, that man was also wounded by the assassin. After both assassinations, there were loud and insistent claims that the fatal shot must have come from a different direction. Each president in his 30s married a socially prominent 24-year-old who spoke French fluently. While in the White House, each president had a family of three children, and both lost a child through death. Both Lincoln and Kennedy were second children. Both had been boat captains. Both were related to a U.S. Senator, Attorney General, Ambassador to Great Britain, and the Mayor of Boston. Each had been elected to Congress in the year 47 and were vice presidential runners-up in the year 56. So 1856 and 1956, 100 years apart. Each was elected president in the year 60. Before each was elected, a sister died. Both had a friend named Billy Graham and knew an Adlai Stevenson. President Kennedy had a secretary named Mrs. Lincoln, and President Lincoln had a secretary named John Kennedy. This is one of those claims that isn't 100% substantiated. I know that one. I was looking up some of these things earlier. So take that one with a grain of salt. The names Lincoln and Kennedy each contain seven letters. Both were succeeded by vice presidents named Johnson, Andrew, born in 1808, and Lyndon in 1908, both of whom had 13 letters in their names and two daughters. Both assassins have 15 letters in their names. Booth shot Lincoln in a theater and fled to a warehouse. Oswald shot Kennedy from a warehouse and fled to a theater. Both assassins were in their turn assassinated by shooters who used a Colt revolver and fired only one fatal shot. There are many more coincidences, but all right, so those are some of the coincidences. Some other ones that were not mentioned here, I would add, were Kennedy was shot in a Ford Lincoln. Lincoln was shot at Ford's Theater. Many weird as coincidences, and those are some of the JFK, and like that article said, there's many more. I want to go over some of the 9/11 similarities to the whole assassination, and you would say, what, 9/11 Lincoln assassination? And like I stated previously, one of the similarities that came to my mind, and this is a list that I compiled myself, but were the simultaneous attacks. Like in 9/11, there were simultaneous attacks for the Lincoln assassination. And like I stated before, both were fueled by quote unquote hate, which is like a favorite word, especially in around the wokesters. And anytime we have lone gunmen, it's always hate. It's always hate. And manifestos. That's another thing. Apparently, Mr. Booth had a manifesto written up, which is, again, another common thread with all these modern day conspiracies. But yeah, Booth hated Lincoln so much. That's what motivated him. Cave-dwelling jihadis hated America so much that's what motivated their attack on 9/11. Another interesting thing that David McGowan pointed out was how the telegram system went down that night at Ford's Theater, and people didn't get the telegram of Abraham Lincoln being dead until many hours later, because it was down. And doesn't that remind you of NORAD going down and all these key systems just conveniently going down while the attackers or alleged hijackers were doing their thing on 9/11? And like I stated, the passports and the suspects being ID'd pretty much immediately. Booth was ID'd immediately. Another interesting thing is shortly after, Booth, like I stated, was an actor. Many actors were viewed suspiciously. people have like, damn, man, if Booth did this, what's up with all these other actors? The interesting thing is Booth's other brothers, Edwin Booth, and I have some more info on that in a little bit, and his other brother, they were actors, and they were never questioned, never looked at as suspects. During 9/11 and after 9/11, when flights were canceled, planes were grounded, one of the few exceptions was that the Bin Laden family was allowed a flight out of Dodge. That's, to me, that's one that, that's a similarity. Let's see. And then I mentioned Ulysses S. Grant snubbing Lincoln that night. And I believe I already touched on it, but remember the creator of Family Guy conveniently missed his flight, and some other elite people missed their flights, and Larry Silverstein just so happened to get a haircut that night. So there's that one. The other interesting thing is Ford's Theater ended up getting destroyed in a fire, and weirdly enough, many of the assassination records were at Ford's Theater. It had been converted into a room for that. What happened on 9/11? WT number 7 came down. No plane hit that son of a bitch, and it came down on its own footprint. And CIA intelligence headquarters were in there. Many records, financial records, were destroyed and lost forever because it just so happened to be the third skyscraper in history that fell down that very goddamn day in its own footprint. So those are some of the 9/11 similarities to the Lincoln assassination. As I stated, David passed away in 2015, so he didn't know anything about the Epstein stuff that would later come out after his death. But some of the Epstein stuff that I thought were very interesting were, as I already mentioned, there were questions about Booth even dying, even being him. And I want to mention one of Booth's direct descendants is Sherry Blair, who is wife of ex-Prime Minister Tony Blair from the UK. Booth descended from from a prominent family, like I already stated, but it's very interesting how so many people knew Booth. Some interesting facts. I said I was going to talk about Edwin Booth, which was John Booth's older brother. Apparently, and this is official story, Robert Todd Lincoln, the youngest Lincoln son, he was 21 when his father got gunned down, but Robert Todd Lincoln seems like a scummy son of a bitch, was also available during the Garfield assassination and the other presidential assassination. So he was around three presidential assassinations. What are the odds? I don't know, but Robert Todd Lincoln comes off as a very shady son of a bitch. And you would say, wait a minute, that's Abraham's son. Well, for starters, he was banging Lucy Hale, who was John Wilkes Booth's fiance. He was banging her out. Pretty fucking weird. Also, at some point in time, while Robert Todd Lincoln was waiting for a train, Edwin Booth, or he was about to fall into the tracks as the oncoming train was coming, and Edwin Booth just so happened to be there and grabs him by the goddamn shirt and pulls him in, and saving Mr. Robert Lincoln's life. And Edwin Booth got rewarded for that. He was held as a hero for that particular act. And how is that related to Epstein? Epstein was, it's a small world, isn't it? That all these things were happening. Oh, and the other thing is, Abraham Lincoln ended up dying on the bed that John Wilkes Booth used to sleep in. Pretty fucking weird coincidences all around, man, all around. Epstein was hanging out with everyone. Bill Clinton flew on the goddamn plane 28 times. Donald fucking Trump flew on the plane 7 times, even though he owned his goddamn own private jet. Epstein knew everyone, but everyone tied to Epstein always says, well, I didn't know he was doing that bull fucking shit. Just a crazy coincidence, right? Small town. So there's a similarity between the Epstein stuff and Booth in that how well intertwined and connected both were in their time period. During Epstein, when he allegedly hung himself, I have questions whether he even died. That's my personal take. I find it hard to believe. But we're told that the security guards slept on the job and the cameras didn't work. Well, what happened with Lincoln? What happened with Lincoln? God damn it, hold up. Sorry, give me one second. I've got to do some. All right, I'm back. Sorry, I have the bladder the size of a pea. So, as far as the interesting thing about the Booth security guard, Abraham Lincoln wanted Captain Crook to be his security guard that night at Ford's Theater. Captain Crook was super well respected and he trusted him, allegedly, very trusted him. And Edwin Stanton, Secretary of War, said, nope, you can't have Captain Crook. He's busy. We are told that Abraham Lincoln met up with Captain Crook earlier that day and said, what's the deal? Why can't you be there? I really want you to be there. He goes, I don't know. Edwin just doesn't want me to be there that night. So Abraham Lincoln's top guy was not allowed to be there. So instead, police officer Parker is assigned the duty. And this is where Mary Todd Lincoln becomes another very suspect individual. Mary Todd Lincoln specifically requested for Parker to be the security guard. And why is this weird? Because Parker was a known drunkard, had been one of the most demerited cops on the force, was completely unreliable, and yet Mary Todd Lincoln specifically wants him to be the security guard for Lincoln that night. And what happens? Stephen Parker never shows up. He instead gets drunk and bangs out some hookers and prostitutes and disappears for a few days, kind of like Jesus Campos. And he is later shows up with a hooker on his side and he's about to charge her, you know, press some charges on her and arrest her because she charged him money. He wanted to get a free bang. She was charging them. You really can't make this up. Or maybe you can. And that's why people have questions regarding the official story. So there's an Epstein connection with the security guards and the, you know, sleeping on the Epstein stuff. This guy's getting drunk and being AWOL when he has one fucking job. one fucking job, and that is to defend Abraham Lincoln. And he goes AWOL. Very, very fascinating shit. Let's see, what other... things that I have. So I think that's pretty much it that I, as far as notes. Let me look at any other, let me look at some of the comments, see if anyone's got any things. What's up, Steve? Yeah, so there you have it. I can't stress it enough. Listen to that audiobook, especially now that you've got a little bit of taste for the assassination. I've been super fascinated. I watched the movie The Conspirators. I think it came out in 2010. It's got Rachel Wood, the chick from what's that AI TV series that came out? She's in it. She's playing Anna Surratt, who is the daughter of Mary Surratt, who was one of the conspirators that was hanged. She was the first woman to ever be executed. And apparently she was 5'3" and had big old bitties. Fun fact. But yeah, that in a nutshell, it was also fascinating how many people weren't really talking about it. So if you found this interesting, definitely smash that like button, share it, and definitely recommend that audiobook, that Mal McGowan book. Like I said, that was the reason I decided to take on the project of voicing it over, because I really fucking loved it, man. I've listened to it several times. And again, I feel like a scholar. But I didn't want to be in an echo chamber. I wanted to explore other views on the assassination. So that's why I listened to that middle of the road version of events. And I also listened to Swanson's official story and retelling of the events. And after analyzing all three, I think McGowan hits it right on the fucking head. He does a great job in pointing out the absurdities. And why should we take this shit as gospel? It's just like any other fucking thing that we are told or said that happened. Question everything, absolute everything, because you just never know. So once again, thank you guys all for tuning in, sending love, hugs, and kisses to each and one of y'all.